Dun, 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 dun. It's What a Wacky Week, the podcast.
Number 96.
Well, thank you, Cousin Jebediah, for that nice introduction. Hey there, Waxters. Tim Hunter back again for another Wacky Week podcast. This week we're going to go back to the beginning of my professional radio career. To quickly recap how the heck I got into radio, I had killed 2 years at the University of Washington, was heading into my junior year, had no idea what I was going to do, and I was talking to a guy down the hall who was involved with a campus radio station. The campus has a radio station? And then I found out you could actually do radio, or actually radio and TV, as a career choice. Well, that didn't sound like work. Sign me up. So I ended up getting involved with KCMU. I graduated after interning over at King Radio. Next thing you know, I was on the prowl and looking for a job. Couldn't find anything in Seattle. They would hire you, but only if you had experience, and of course you can't get experience unless they hire you. So I gandered into the Washington State Association of Broadcasters job site, and lo and behold, there was a job opening at a radio station called KQOT over in Yakima. I sent them a resume. They called and set up an appointment. I drove over. I met with them. And next thing you know, I was the new guy at 93 KQOT Yakima, where in the mornings you were listening to Brady Lehman, and I've dug him up on the phone from the Tri-Cities. Hey, Brady, how you doing?
Good morning, Tim.
How's life treating you?
Pretty good, better than I deserve, I'm sure.
That radio station, that was my first ever professional radio station, and I was so thrilled to be there, and you were the morning guy, and I was the afternoon guy, and during chunks of the year, that was all they needed because it was what they call a daytimer.
And I doubt people really understand that concept anymore. But due to the frequency we were on, we could only broadcast at 1,000 watts. We couldn't come on the air until 6 in the morning. And in the middle of the winter, we were off the air at, 3:30 in the afternoon.
And then during the summer, when the sun stayed up longer, we got to stay on until like 9 or something like that.
So. Exactly.
You being the morning guy, you had certain duties you had to do when you showed up at work.
We went on the air at 6, and I pretty much had to get there by 5. We had no news department, of course, so the morning man had to call the police department and the sheriff's office and the fire department and find out if there's been any horrendous things happen overnight, call the weather service and get the weather forecast updated. The AP wire machine was ticking away all night, and it probably took 10 to 15 minutes to clear all that copy that was printed overnight and rip off material that we needed and discard all the stuff we didn't use.
If the weekender remembered to put paper in, that was your first radio station?
Absolutely. Funny story how I got into it. I collected music since high school all the way through college and just loved music of any kind. I had polio as a child, and my legs were kind of giving out. I was working in the restaurant business in Seattle, Shakey's Pizza, and Bob Moore, that owned KQOT in Yakima, was a longtime friend of my father. And one time Bob ran into my dad, says, "How's your middle boy Brady doing?" And Dad says, "Oh, he's kind of struggling, you know, his legs are kind of giving out on him because of his polio." And Bob said, "Well, send him over here to Yakima and I'll hire him as a DJ."
Wow.
"And have a job where he sits down." And I found about it, no experience whatsoever. I mean, I majored in speech at UW, but it was more speech science than presentation. I had to read up and get a third class radio telephone permit we had to get from the federal government.
Right.
I got that, and then within a month, they called me and said, "We got an opening for a morning man."
Wow.
The first time I was on the air, the kid on the air was on the air from, I don't know, 6 to 9 in the morning. And then he said, "Are you think you're ready to take over?" And I put the headphones on and clicked the mic on and come out of a record. And I said, that was. He says, "You never heard yourself through the headphones." The first month or two, pretty intimidating, I say. You had the advantage on me because you had a certain amount of training and experience over at King when you were, an intern?
Mm-hmm, under Mr. Steve Lawson, yeah. How long had you been the morning guy when I showed up?
Well, forgive me, but I don't remember. I think I went on the air in 75.
Okay, so that was about 2 years. I got there in spring. It's either April or May of 77.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I went in and interviewed with Dorothy, the business manager, and a little bit with Bob, and then they said, "Well, let's put him on the air and hear what he sounds like." So I go walking into the control room. They tap the guy that's on the air on the shoulder and tell him to get out of the seat. And they put me on for an hour and went out and drove around and listened to me. And talk about scared to death. I mean, going from a job interview to being on the air, not knowing the format or anything. First time I had seen the equipment. So you just kind of made it up as you went along, and somehow it all worked out.
Well, indeed it did. You were... It kind of put me to shame with your production skills because I'd had no training in that.
We had, first off, the control room was the production room. It was, when you went off at night is when I did my production, and it was with a reel-to-reel and scissors and tape.
I remember.
So, yeah, you go to the University of Washington, and then you come over and go, whoa.
We had a production room in the transmitter room. Or a production area, that's what I use because when I did any production, it was in the middle of the day when we were on the air. You were talking about meeting with Dorothy. She was quite a story. I'm thinking she was maybe middle 50s when you worked there.
Yeah, probably.
She was radio station manager. That was unheard of in 1977. You know, radio was just... The only women that got jobs were the gal at the front desk.
Denise.
Denise typed up the program logs, you know. One of my favorite Dorothy stories is she was sitting in her office one morning. And, of course, we didn't have a receptionist until Denise got out of school.
Mm.
So some salesman guy comes in, pokes his head into Dorothy's office and says, "Hey, sweetie. Could you tell the manager that I'm here, that I'd like to talk to him?" Dorothy said, "Yes, certainly. You just have a seat here." She let him sit there for about 20 minutes. And then she came out and said, "I've got time for you now. Come on in." And of course, he is embarrassed as hell.
Well, I remember the picture of Bob Moore, the owner of the radio station, that they had on the wall was a picture of him. And it probably had to be taken in the 1950s sometime. And it was him driving a manure truck in a parade.
Yep, that was Bob.
That was Bob.
I don't know if this occurred when you were there, but you're on the air and you're trying to be a professional top 40, you know, really tight format DJ. And you're just rolling along and, you know, you're playing some Bob Seger and some Fleetwood Mac, and you're really proud of your segues. And all of a sudden, the phone rings, and it's Bob Moore. And he says, "Brady, when this song gets over, put me on the air." Well, he's the owner of the dang station.
Yep.
What are you going to do? You put him on the air, and he's giving a live report from the livestock auction in Toppenish.
Wow.
Kind of diminishes your giving a darn about working hard at sounding professional.
Well, you get me going on Bob Moore stories. I know he used to record in that that second room where the transmitter was, and there was a loud buzz. And what he would do is, you know, clean the cart, put it in, hit the record button, and start it. And then he would rustle his papers, clear his throat, and then do the commercial. So every time you played that commercial, you'd hear the rustling of the papers and the clearing of the throat. So after a while, I would fast forward and cue because I knew when it started. And, you know, again, trying to have that tight board. But there was one time he called up, and I don't remember if it was myself or Skip Tucker, another member of the club, who put him on the air, and he told a Pollock joke.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's just like,
he's the owner. He can do what he wants. But there was another time, too, that he once called up, and he wanted to give away, I think, Gary Myrie, our sales manager. By the way, I stay in touch with both Gary and Skip. And they say hi. But Gary had gone out and done the, you know, call, meet me at this phone booth. If you're the first one here, you win a turkey or you win whatever movie tickets or whatever it is we were giving away.
But Thanksgiving, we were giving away turkeys, and he'd call up and say, I want to give somebody the bird.
Yep, yep. And at Christmas, we did the goose. We wanted to give him a goose. But Bob heard this, and he thought, well, I want to play along too. So one day, he went out and called up, and we put him on the air live again. And Bob liked his, I don't know what his choice was, but if it had alcohol in it, he drank it. And he was out one time, and he called up and wanted to be in the air, and he said he was at the corner of Rodgers. And I had to ask him to repeat it, and it never got clear, and then I just wished the audience good luck in finding him. Oh, my God. And we lived through this.
Q93 realizes that once you've put a KQOT window sticker in your car, the way our sticker man moves around, it isn't all that easy to win. Sometimes you'd get lost looking for him. Sometimes he'd get lost.
I'm in front of a Mayfair market. It's the Mayfair market on 12th Avenue, and I'm just south of Tyson Drive and just north of Spruce. No, that's not right. I'm just north of Tyson Drive and south of Spruce.
So to make matters simple, we'll be waiting for you tomorrow from 4 to 7 at either Tiki Car Wash. And if you have a 93 sticker in your car, you'll get it washed free. There'll be a few cars we won't be able to wash because of the equipment, but come on by anyway. We'd like to meet you. So stick it to your car and drop by either Tiki Car Wash at 102 South 1st Street or at 407 Knob Hill between 4 and 7 tomorrow, and we'll clean you out. Become a part of the Valley's music leader and
the best station in the world,
KQOT.
I found some news articles, and all it says at the top is the scene, and I don't know if that was a supplement or a section of the Herald Republic, for sure. But anyway, one of them is Tim Hunter, the man with the funny bone behind KQOT's microphone.
Oh, wow.
September 24th of 77. Found another one, KQOT's main man on the mic, Brady Layman.
Oh, nice.
Didn't intend to be a DJ.
You know, among the many things I was proud of, well, I was proud of what we did with the station with all the limitations. We still got those numbers up. They only do a rating book once a year, but I think we saw some nice upward movement in the younger demos for the time we were together. But those Grizzly Bear River floats were probably the biggest thing that I think the station pulled off.
That was absolutely remarkable. And I know Skip Tucker and I were on the KQOT float. Did you float the river that day, or were you reporting from the sidelines?
Well, we did a couple of them, and I know the one year there was a guy that worked at the station called Terry Michaels, and we had picked a Miss KQOT river float, and we had a queen and two princesses, all of which could have gotten us thrown in jail, but they were on this triangular wood float that we built, and what happened was we thought this would be a great idea. But we built this float out of wood, and it was fine at the beginning, but, you know, that's like a four-hour float. So by the end of the thing, the wood had gotten soaked. We were all underwater and barely made it in. Gosh, and remember we used to have the high school news was one of the things where we had high school students
come in the afternoon.
Yep. Wow.
On the air. I remember one of those kids was in one day and happened to see a rate card. A rate card was a piece of paper that explained how much it cost to buy commercials. I actually found one around here somewhere.
Oh, geez.
This kid looked at the rate card and says, "Is that all it costs to get a commercial on KQOT?" And I said, "Well, that's what it is." And he says, "Well, geez, I should just take out a commercial and say, hey, would you like to go out with me?" You know, advertise for dates. You know, for a long time, they're consistently last in the ratings. Every Arbitron book came out, and so our to attract advertisers, we had to have a pretty reasonable... That's also the reason we didn't make a living wage.
Right, there's that. Yeah, I think, what was I? I started out of college, 4 years of college, and came over, and I think it was $350 a month, and then if I worked out, as it was described, like was there 3 months later, then it was bumped up to $400 a month.
And I think the tops I got was somewhere in the low 500s.
Wow.
The Hunter 570 or...
Well, you're the morning guy. You got the big bucks.
Well, and I was there for over four years.
Yeah.
I built a portable disco. We used to go around and...
Oh, yeah.
DJ high school dances and stuff. Remember Victor, my partner?
Victor, and I know Fred tagged along every now and then. And
Yeah, we called it the KQOT Music Machine.
That's what it was.
There were a lot of months that I made more money DJing high school dances and weddings and reunions than I made in my salary.
Wow.
Station. Yeah, true. Other thing I found, I found the KQOT Top 100 of 1976, and I read the songs on it, and I'm pretty sure we just made it up off the top of our head.
Hey, we could do anything we want, you know? What were the top five songs?
We got Silly Love Songs by Wings, Don't Go Breaking My Heart, Elton and Kiki D,
yep.
Afternoon Delight, Starland Vocal Band,
yeah.
December 1963, The Four Seasons, and Tonight's the Night, Rod Stewart.
So how long did you last at KQOT, and tell us about what happened after that.
I was at the station for 4 years, but I believe it was 79, sometime in 79, Bob and Dorothy decided to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they sell the radio station to Grant McDaniel, and he'd been a long-time morning man at KIT.
Right.
And he decided to have a town and country format. He wanted KQOT to be what radio was in the 1930s, where the radio was the family entertainment, and the whole family sat around the radio together.
Wow.
Well, this is 1979, and it didn't work that way. But to give you an example, I can remember playing a Bee Gees record, followed by a Willie Nelson country song, followed by Glenn Miller Orchestra.
Wow.
Is that going to turn off just about every potential listener that you have?
Yeah, if you're not hearing a song you hate now, just stay close. It's coming up. I've often said to my other radio friends, and they're still friends, but they're not involved in radio anymore, is just, I feel like I was lucky to catch the last little radio hurrah, because there is still radio, but... the audience has been, even more fragmented than ever before. And it's, people are listening to music on their phones, or they're listening to podcasts or streaming podcasts on their phones, or, and then
radio.
And radio's gotten so corporate where, people are tracking out very few of the midday shifts are live anymore. And it's just not the way it used to be.
75 to 79, when I was there, I believe all those stations in Yakima were privately owned by local individuals. And I believe it was the same in the Tri-Cities where I am now. And now in the Tri-Cities, I think there might be 3 radio station owners, and each one owns 4, maybe 5 radio stations.
Yeah.
And it's corporate ownership. I mean, ownership might be in Spokane, or it might be in L.A. It's crazy.
You were Brady Lehman III, weren't you?
That is correct.
And there's a 4th running around, right?
Yes, there is.
Wow. What's he up to now?
Oh, Brady's been doing inventory work. He's an inventory auditor. I think he's been doing it for 20 years now. And then Kelly, she was born after I got down here to the Tri-Cities.
Mm-hmm.
She's working for Amazon. They have a phone center out at in a building near Columbia Center Mall.
But both of them steered clear of radio.
They certainly did.
Good for you. You did well.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, the Reading for the Blind, some local people decided to organize a group of volunteers to read the local paper on the air for the blind community here in the Tri-Cities.
Ah.
And I ended up reading for the blind for the next 25 years.
Wow.
And I'm quite proud of that.
Well, and before we wrap this up too, Brady, I need to say 2 very important words. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
That's nice we were able to catch you on your birthday.
I was looking for it this morning, my Earth shirt that says older than dirt on the back, but I couldn't find it. Memory lapses are frequent, but...
Dare I ask, how old are you?
72.
Wow.
Born in the year we dropped the big one on Japan.
A proud family moment.
What can I say, Tim?
Well, Brady, my friend, it's great to reconnect with you like this. I will send you all the stuff I can scan and send your way, and I'd love to see what you have at your end. So it's been great getting caught up with you.
I appreciate it, Tim. I really do. It's been fun.
You know, it has been fun. And what can make it even more fun is digging out an old radio commercial the two of us did many, many years ago. And notice it's a Valentine's Day commercial, too.
Excuse me, but I come into Burger Ranch all the time, and I've never seen you before.
Oh, I'm the Burger Ranch Cupid, and I only come out around Valentine's Day.
If you're the Burger Ranch Cupid, where's your bow and arrow?
Oh, you don't need a bow and arrow at the Burger Ranch. When you're hungry, they hit the target every time, and they put their heart into everything they make.
And I suppose you're wearing a 10-gallon.
That's right, a 10-gallon diaper. So take it from the Burger Ranch Cupid. When you want to give your appetite and your cardiac a rest, mosey on into the Burger Ranch at 15th and Knob Hill, just across from YBC.
Okay, that's enough romance for this week, folks. Thank you so much for stopping by, Waxsters. My name is Tim Hunter. This is the Wacky Week Podcast. We'll do it again next week. But until then, I do have this one simple request. Laugh a little, would you?